Hey guys, this is Richard Sacks. We're back with our friend Joel Skousen for our final part of at least this series. And we've been talking about the history of the deep state up to now, and not a lot of extremely cheerful prognosis for the future, but preparation being one of the, I guess, positive parts of it that we can respond with. And what I wanted to do this time with Joel, editor of World Affairs Brief and author of The Secure Home and Strategic Relocation and consultant for people who are involved in doing that stuff, we'd like to take advantage of his long experience with consulting for people that know about the scenarios that are being predicted and are trying to prepare the best they can, and talk about, we can't go into, you know, all the detail of the different aspects of preparation. You need to read the books for that. But I guess the main themes and things for people to watch out about as they're reading about the details, what are the things to watch out and really look for, and what are the ways to avoid the traps that are so frequent in intentional communities of all kinds. So we can start there and see where it goes. So welcome, Joel.
Well, thank you very much, Richard and Doug. It's just great to be with you again. I want to start off, before I get to the hopeful side, with a couple of general statements about how important the negative is.
Okay.
You know, we've talked in the past, and I've talked in my newsletter, The World Affairs Brief, extensively about the fact that after the election of Donald Trump, preparedness sites and conservative lobbying sites really tanked financially. The biggest preparedness site in the whole world, Emergency Essentials, literally went out of business within months of Trump being elected.
Wow.
And we're talking about multiple warehouses, huge telephone bank, not people soliciting, just taking calls and orders. Their orders just didn't decline slowly. They went down at about a 90% rate until they couldn't even pay their rent on their extensive warehousing.
Wow.
And had to be bought out at pennies on the dollar. I mean, it was very, very sad, because this was a very, very excellent organization. Now, I say that because if people have hope that Donald Trump is going to save them, for the most part, and there are a few enlightened people that will prepare anyway, but for the most part, generally, people will not prepare if they think that somebody's going to save them.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I hope that people have gotten from this information that I've given is the deep state is big, it's powerful, it controls every Western government at its core levels underneath the surface of government. And it controls about 75% of the population, the politicians, most of the judges. And this is, and it's a deadly organization. It's not just bureaucratic. It's not the bureaucrats. This is deadly people with law enforcement, armed forces, power to be able to take down people. And the only reason they don't do it significantly, they just don't want people to know how much power and how that they can do. And so they're careful not to alert the majority of people to what kind of power they have. Now, we've seen a lot of their power come out to stop Donald Trump. But I just want to let people know, this war that I've talked about, the Third World War with Russia and China, is going to happen. This isn't a 99% possibility. This is a 100% possibility. Now, because it's going to happen, the good news is it's not going to happen immediately. Russia is the only other country beside the United States that has the full-scale satellite military-connected targeting system that can put precision weapons anywhere in the world. All right, they have their GLONASS system.
Right.
China is starting to build one, but they're a long ways away from getting that satellite, secure satellites up there. So that's one of the reasons they're not ready. Russia just announced their Vanguard, hypersonic missile, but there's only one, deployed. They've got to build a whole bevy of these things. The U.S. is trying to play catch up with hypersonic weapons and some kind of anti-ship and anti-missile system that can protect against these hypersonic missiles. This will continue to evolve. And as it evolves, it continues to delay the confidence level of Russia and China to take on the West. But it is going to happen. And part of the reason it's going to happen is because it's not, as most liberals say, why can't we just get along? Why do people have to go to war? There is a real Satan in this universe, and he is trying to destroy God's work on Earth. And part of that work is this planet we live on. It's a testing platform to see if we'll learn to live by the promptings of the Holy Spirit, by conscience, depending on the level of spiritual awareness that a person has, if you'll avoid the false spiritual things that come from spiritualism. And there's just a whole host of difficult scenarios to go through in life. And with my own children and with my subscribers, I have made a considerable attempt to teach them how to listen to the promptings of conscience, the little nervous feelings that warn you when something's not quite right. I use it all the time when I'm writing the World Affairs Brief to check whether or not a story is legitimate. I just feel nervous about certain things. It doesn't tell me what's right or what's wrong, but I have to continue to do the homework. But at least I get a warning signal saying, don't go there.
Yeah.
There are those promptings, those pushing feelings that get you to get up and do what you know you're supposed to be doing, especially when you don't feel like it. Yeah. I mean, that's the great answer to depression. When you get depressed, a lot of that is Satan piggybacking on your mind and saying, oh, you don't want to do it. You're too tired to do anything. There's just no hope. He keeps drumming at people. And if people would teach their youth how to listen to conscience, how to have the self-control to get yourself out of bed, get yourself off the couch to exercise and eat right when you feel like, when you know you should, but you don't feel like it, This world would be a much better place and you will be much better prepared. Because I'm going to tell you, no matter how good my books are on preparedness, no matter how much, if you haven't developed a good sense of conscience, of listening to those warning signals, You won't be fully prepared, and you may be sitting in the middle of L.A. at the time because you missed signals about don't go into the city that day.
It's really interesting that you bring up the whole value of feeling, these intuitions that has started a lot of real science and real spiritual investigation and things like that, because something is trying to wake you up and say, check on this, find out what's really going on in the universities. And I'm right in the middle of that world now, too. One of the big things they want to teach you is don't listen to feeling. That it's unscientific. It is not trustable. It's not like looking up the experts on the CDC site or something that you know are 100% reliable. Feeling is junk, and you're going to get degrees instead.
And, there's a whole philosophy within the Christian community about don't trust your feelings, only trust the Word of God. Do you see? But the Word of God, it was never meant to be a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a step to salvation. It's to teach you how to listen to the Spirit. It's to give you multiple experiences so that you can feel how the Spirit of the Lord feels when you read the Scriptures. So when you teach people that spirituality is mechanistic, you follow a 1, 2, 3 step to success, you just aren't teaching the right thing. Sure, there is traps and dangers in listening to feeling, because Satan is also working on your conscience. And the interesting thing about conscience is that it comes in your own grammar and your own style. It sounds like you talking to yourself. And so it's utterly indistinguishable except by the content and the associated feelings. Mm-hmm. The contents, when you know that something's right, you feel it's right, and then you get that rationalization, you don't want to do that. You're just listening to a conversation between the divine trying to help you and Satan trying to dissuade you.
Like the cartoons with the white and dark angels.
That's right, on the shoulder.
Yeah.
But you can see how important this is to teach your children and to practice it as adults. You can't be a hypocrite. You can't be eating junk food and then telling your kids, that you got to eat right. Mm-hmm. You can't be overweight and be getting your children prepared for hard times, by being in shape and by, having the self-control skills that are necessary. What I've just said in the past 2 or 3 minutes is some of the most important advice I could ever give people, is to tie them into their own conscience. And it's not an exact science, but by trial and error, when you get deceived and you realize, oh, that didn't work out, you'll realize there was a counter nervous feeling to the false rationalization that you bought into. There was a counter nervous feeling saying, it's not yet. You really shouldn't be feeling calm about that. And Satan's working to make you feel calm about the wrong things. And it's only by experience and listening assiduously to those little promptings that you learn which are the good ones and which are the false ones. And there's another hint that I can give from long experience. 90%+ of all the promptings that come to your mind through conscience are about temporal things, not spiritual, or not things that you perceive as spiritual. They are about picking things up as you're walking down the hall that you don't, oh, I'll do that later. You rush. It's about getting up on time. It's about eating right. It's about not buying the junk food. It's about, being reminded, and you say, oh, that was smart of me to remember that. Well, give credit to where it's due, and you'll find the Lord will bless you with more information. And the more you fight against the rationalizations and develop the self-control, to do what you know you should do, especially when you don't feel, that's a very good principle, you will find that you get blessed with more. And I can guarantee that if you're living right and listening and trying to do what's right, you'll get warned about these cataclysmic events.
Right.
If you have prepared, and there's a little, it's not just the one big warning, get out of town today. I'm saying it's the issue. You get little warnings about what to prepare and how to save money and how not to spend your money on things that will have long-term dividends.
About procrastination and stuff too, right?
That's right. Now, let me say about, in terms of the hopeful side, the reason I spend my life wearing it out trying to alert people to the dangers of the deep state and the coming war that they're going to use to bring us into the new world order, militarized global government, is because this is a testing ground on earth. And the Lord is not going to permit good people who are listening to the promptings and assiduously preparing. And not everybody can be 100% prepared. That's almost impossible. It's all relative. But he's judging on what we do and how much we're listening and how much we're fulfilling, no matter what our limited circumstances are. And there are blessings in store for those who do their best. And I mean really do their best, not just try a little bit, but really sacrifice to do what is right to get prepared. And I believe that there will be pockets of liberty even during this war, and there will be safer places, safer, not perfectly safe, but safer places. And there will be people, which I consider that will be sources of the gathering. In other words, what's going to happen is that most of the good people in the world are still in the major cities, which are going to be a death trap with a combination EMP and physical nuclear strike on military targets. Because even though your city may not have a major military target, and even if it does, the circular air probable of a nuclear weapon is about 5 to 10 miles. If you're outside that, you're not going to die. There will be a lot of fallout, could die later, but there's going to be massive social unrest everywhere because of the EMP strike, at least over America. No communications, everything's going to be blank, no TVs, no radios. All the cars won't be out. It depends on, as I explained before, on whether or not you're right underneath a 300-mile circle of those weapons that go off. Mm. But you may be without transportation. It's going to be a Mad Max scenario in the big cities. As I pointed out in strategic relocation, your biggest enemy is going to be population densities when this happens. So you do not want to be in a major city. Now, let me tell you something about this attitude that of hopelessness. I can't do anything because I have to be in LA because of my job. I just have no other choice. Well, you do have a choice. And let me tell you what that choice is. If I'm right about this nuclear scenario, but EMP 1-2 strike with a physical strike, there's going to be a Mad Max scenario in the LA Basin, which is, 100 miles across, filled with 20 plus million people. total gridlock during traffic, let alone in a panic situation. Sooner or later, you're going to have to flee that city. Do you want to flee in the middle of a Mad Max scenario or try to flee? Or do you want to get out before? So no matter how hard you think it is, how utterly unacceptable or impossible it is, you think of staying in L.A. with a Mad Max scenario and say, no, I'd rather be out even if I lose my job before it happens. Now, I'm not suggesting that you run out today, quit your job and get out to Ruralsville. That's what happened during Y2K. I was on the radio doing interviews with Dr. Gary North as his strategic relocation specialist. I was talking about the potential of the meltdown of Y2K, of the computers, and what it could do to society. And I said to people, but remember, don't quit your job over this, because the chances are that the government's going to fix this. And there were only about 5 or 6 major glitches that they couldn't fix that they fixed afterwards. But I said, don't quit your day job. Prepare to get out of the city, be out of the city when the Y2K thing, but don't quit your job. And I must have been inundated with calls from people that said, oh, I quit my job and I went out and sold everything and took all my savings and did my preparedness things, and now I'm out of money because self-sufficiency is expensive. What do I do now? I said, you got to go back and start all over again. Don't sell your preparedness. A lot of these people just gave away their stuff. I said, you'll still need it someday. Don't sell your things. But go back and reestablish your financial lifeline. You've got to keep that going because it takes money to be able to prepare. Unless you're a Larry Olson, the guru on survival techniques of living with just a knife and making your own way in the wilderness, that's not the way most of us want to try to survive.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that you have to, but know when to get out. You don't want to be, as Gary North says, trying to make the last train out.
Mm-hmm.
Of the scenario. You want to be out beforehand. And that's one of the reasons why I hope your listeners will subscribe to my World Affairs Brief. Not only do you get my analysis of what's happening every week relative to the deep state and what they're trying to do, but I'm going to, having my ear to the ground, and know as best of anybody probably when this war has a high probability of happening.
Right.
And as we've said before, people can get a free sample copy simply by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. If they email this week, they'll get the year-end 2019 year in review, which is usually a fascinating review of not only what's happened in the year, but how the war situation looks, what the Russian and Chinese position is so far. It's a very interesting brief.
China just announced they surpassed the U.S. in naval strength, right? Did you hear about that?
Yeah. Of course, you know, that doesn't account for the technological differences, too, We've got some pretty high-tech Aegis warships. But it's inevitable that they're going to steal enough technology with Russia and China, or going to at least equal us in the technology. And these high-speed supersonic anti-ship missiles exceed our ability to stop them. The myth of ballistic missile defense is really a myth. I mean, it can take down some of them, but it can't take down swarms of drones or swarms of missiles. Just can't do it. So there's going to be some damage. We're going to lose some lives in this war, and it's not going to be nice. But I still don't believe, as I've said before, I think Satan runs these three major predator centers in the world, our own Anglo-American globalist conspirators, the Russians and the Chinese conspirators, which are all three separate. And they're all being promised, I think, by satanic forces, success in this. But I think, you know, the Anglo-American globalists, that's where, you know, Satan is going to concentrate his worst power, because that's where Christianity really is based. That's where the good people are really based, most of them good people. And he's got to attack that center through our own globalist conspiracy. Now, going back to...
I just had one quick question.
Yes.
Not to lose your train of thought. But a bunch of people asked during the week, because of some things we were talking about before, do you still feel that there will be no invasion? And if so, if Russia and China or whoever attacks doesn't want the territory, why do they want to attack anyway?
Well, they want to attack to destroy the American military so that they can blackmail the world, the Western world, into submission. They don't want to destroy the economies. Communists know that we cannot surpass the West in innovation. it takes a certain amount of freedom, or at least controlled freedom, because that's what we've really got here in the Western world. But they want to blackmail the Western spirit, not destroy it. That's what they're intending to do. And I don't believe they're going to.
But what do they want out of it if they don't want the country?
Well, they want to control it economically so that they can milk it for everything it's worth.
Okay.
All right. They continue. Anyone with a New World Order conspiratorial view wants to tell the people you're still free, but now you're controlled, and we want to have this massive tax revenue. We want to have all these bureaucracies and the wealth. You know, every one of these dictatorships, whether it's globalist, whether it's Chinese or Russian, they're all wealthy at the top. They're all corrupt. They all following Satan's call. These are not good people. There's not a single one of these leaders that is anyone but a dictatorial tyrant who has many women, wine, women, song, yachts, and all the pleasures that the world can provide. And that will never, ever change. That's the nature of evil. And evil will always persist in the world.
Have they calculated that there won't be something like a nuclear winter as a result?
Yeah, none of the nuclear powers believe in the nuclear winter. None of the nuclear powers intend to destroy civilization. They know. And to give people an example, you could take all the nuclear weapons in the world and put it on Mount St. Helens, and you wouldn't remove as much of that mountain as it did when it blew its top in 1983. I was there living in that area when it blew its top, and I'll tell you, the whole half of one side of the mountain went up into the air.
And I flew over it right after it happened.
So don't believe the nuclear winter. It's not that there won't be some cooling. We're already going to be in a mini ice age, which will destroy any notion about the global warming scenarios. We get into a solar cooling cycle. But in any case, the point I'm trying to say is that I don't believe they're going to invade. You've got 500 million arms plus that we know about in this nation. And no nation would be crazy to have to maintain the lifelines of naval support all the way across two oceans in order to occupy this country, with the snipers and the guerrilla forces capable of being armed with 500 million private weapons. Not to mention, if the armories of the United States empty out in a chaos of type of thing, you're going to have over a million weapons. And so I just don't feel that invasion is the thing you have to worry about. If it does, we're going to deal with it. But the point is, you don't want to get into this scenario that, we've just lost total control. Society will knit back together. And I'm saying one of the greatest dangers we'll have is the New World Order will start to have an oath of allegiance whereby people who are dissenters will be ferreted out by saying anybody won't have an oath of allegiance to this new global government, we're going to round up and put in concentration camps. And your neighbors will turn you in because you believe in conspiracy. You're the enemy. You're not supporting this glorious war. This will be, treated as motherhood and apple pie, the war against Russia and China. And if you blame our government for this, then you're a conspirator and you need to be locked up.
Well, they're already demonstrating some of that on a little bit lower scale with the pending forced vaccines for the whole population, including adults now.
Yeah.
And they're suggesting openly to put people who won't do that in jail.
Yeah, you have to be willing to escape. That's another reason for strategic relocation. You've got to be able to get out of New York once it becomes a vaccine mandated. You got to get out of California. I don't care how comfortable your living situation, what your job is. Remember, it's just like the war scenario. At some point, it's going to be much, much worse, and you don't want to be walking to safety, evading roving mobs. You want to get out beforehand. Now, so let's talk about strategic relocation.
Okay.
Let's talk about the great conflict. I get calls and emails all the time from people say, Joel, just tell me where the safest place is to go and I'll go there.
Right.
Well, it doesn't work that way because the safest place is out in the middle of the Nevada or Utah desert where there's nobody around for 100 miles and only one dirt road going in, and it's utterly unlivable, but it's safe. And if you're going to build a retreat in that area, you're going to have to travel 3 hours to the nearest Home Depot for supplies. you're not going to get any contractors to come out that far. It's going to cost you $1 million+ to do. And it's just not, you see, so safety is a relative thing. It's a compromise. And I'm not just talking about, you know, being close enough to the city to build your retreat. There's all kinds of factors that deal into this. No man is an island. People have family. They have a wife. They have children. They have relatives. They have connections. You can't just abandon all of that, and you don't need to. But everything is a real good compromise, and that's why I took the 300 and some pages of strategic relocation to go through all of the factors, whether it's access to alternative medicine, how much gun control is in there in the state, what kind of conspiracy involved. For example, in Colorado used to be a highly rated state of 4 stars, and now it's down to 2 stars in the newest edition that's coming out this next year. But I mean, the alternate center of the globalist elite is in Denver. They have a whole underground bunker system under the Denver airport, which they built, and it's still kept highly secret for the elite. It's the alternate center. When Washington, D.C. gets nuked, these people intend to be in that. So you don't want to be in the Denver area and where you have these power elite that control the state and city and the area, et cetera. That doesn't mean that in Colorado you can't find some decent retreat areas, but you don't want to be anywhere near the Colorado Springs or the Denver area.
You did say in your previous edition that some states, whole states, are really not desirable to stay in, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, there's some zero-star states like Florida, and there's a lot of people in Florida and a lot of conservatives in Florida. But Florida has 2 roads out of the state, and those 2 roads are going to be packed. It's a long way to go. And don't think about getting out by long, slow boats. There's going to be a lot of piracy on the open seas, you know, and there's a lot of people think, I'm just going to be out there self-sufficient in my boat. But what happens when you have a pirate boat come up and want to take you over? Mm-hmm. Nobody allows guns to come into their ports. That you can't. You should have weapons on board, but you better hide them well, because, you know, they're going to get confiscated if you go into almost any port with weapons on board. But the boat scenario is okay until they find you, just like an island. Don't pick any of these islands. There's no way to get off once you get, found, and they're going to hunt you down. I also cover in strategic relocation a lot about foreign things. A lot of people in the United States think about, or at least they used to, think about going to New Zealand and Australia.
Well, there are stories about a lot of the billionaires going there, and Maui and Tasmania, places like that.
Well, and the assumption is these people know what they're doing, and they know, but they don't know what they're doing. Because I'll tell you, Australia sold all of its mineral rights to the Chinese, and the Chinese are going to occupy that nation to hold those mineral rights and all of those things in China. And New Zealand just lost all their gun rights in one fell swoop through a false flag operation on this mosque that was shot up. And this homosexual lady governor of the of New Zealand, or prime minister of New Zealand, just gave away all the gun rights in one fell swoop. Now, this tells you something. It's the same about Latin America. Yeah, there's cheap living in Latin America. You can go to Panama, but they're closing down the news. The banking laws now don't allow you to access your accounts and things without going through the IRS. They have all kinds of watchdog things, except unless you're the elite, you can get away with that. But let me tell you something. I've lived in Latin America. I've lived in Central America, and I can tell you that the number of people who would be resistant to government, non-socialist oriented people, are just a handful. Whereas in America, you have millions of people who are schooled in the feeling of constitutional resistance to government, allies that you can band together with. So naturally, you don't have to convert them and convince them to libertarian governmental principles. They're already mostly there, but not in Latin America. You've got number of patriot people who understand are in the thousands. They're in the millions here in America. And so even though America will be the target of this nuclear weapons combination EMP strike, the point is, when all that tourism in Latin America ends, those governments are going to be bankrupt in an instant, and they're going to go after your foreigner bank accounts, and you won't have any rights. And you people who think you've got these safe havens and these American communities in Mexico are going to find just how vulnerable you are in a corrupt state like Mexico when the stuff hits the fan. So America's the place to be if you want the highest degree of safety. but not every place in America. You don't want to be in the New York metro area where it's 1,000 people per square mile. There's just no way to survive in a Mad Max scenario when you've got that many people per square mile. So urban density is your biggest threat, and you've got to be prepared to get out of the urban density areas before it happens.
Did you give Hawaii zero stars as well?
Who?
Did you give Hawaii zero stars?
Yes, that's correct. And I have lived in Hawaii. That was my first military station at Kaneohe, Hawaii, and I flew to all the islands in my F-4 Phantom. But I can tell you, everything is shipped in there. Everything's expensive. All of the electricity is run by diesel fuel and has to be shipped in to that. It's just going to be a nightmare, and the soil isn't very conducive, unless you want to have poi, and other native things that do grow there. But there's just millions of people there that are not going to survive well. Perhaps, the best if one is in Hawaii already, the Big Island has the biggest area of uninhabited areas that can help people, but it's still going to be hard to survive in any of these islands, especially if they get occupied by the Chinese, which I think is a certainty. It's just too far away from the United States to be properly defended. So you don't ever want to live under the occupation of Orientals. As the Japanese showed, they were ruthless. They had no regard for human life during World War II, and the Chinese are the same way. The Orient, I have seen videos. You can see this today on YouTube. You can see a little boy walking down a busy alleyway with people lining both sides of the alleyway, and a truck runs him over, and nobody goes to help the little kid. Nobody. They just keep walking. Now, that is a systematic disregard for human life.
It's approaching that in big American cities, too, right, in the densest parts of them. The attitude gets in that direction.
I think it's in that direction, but I have never seen that in Western culture, where somebody wouldn't go over to attend to that little boy that got run over. But that's what was visible. And it's just right there. It's plain. It's not Photoshop. This has really happened.
So now, I'm not saying don't relocate to China, in other words.
So remember those compromises that if you're in a big city, then what if you have to stay in the big city? Your chances of getting out of a big city in the war are much better if you live at the periphery. So let's suppose you've got a job and you've got to be in the LA. Well, get to the periphery and commute in. Pay the extra price to commute during good times so you can be at the periphery. And hopefully get a job in a satellite area of the company where you're not clear into the depths of the commuting things. You won't be able to get out if it happens during the daytime when you're at work. But a lot of people don't realize that you can get outside into the periphery and be fairly safe, or at least be the first one to get out if you have to escape. Because even if a nuclear weapon goes off and panic ensues, it takes at least a half an hour to an hour for those freeways to become gridlocked.
That's if the cars still work, though, right?
It is, but as I say, if you're really a serious prepper, you're going to have a vehicle and a stockpile of fuel that allows you to get out in a vehicle that isn't subject to EMP or as subject. Yeah. Pre-year 2000, TDI Volkswagen diesels are a great vehicle to buy that are very non-subject to EMP. Pre-1984 vehicles have no electronics to fry, so they're a good bet as well. There's lots of different options in that way. But don't be all consumed about having a vehicle, because remember, your chances of getting out with a vehicle are slim anyway if you wait too long. And so don't put all your eggs in one basket in that regard. The second thing is you've got to be aware of the beltways that go around all your major metro areas or the freeway system that circles it, because that's like a moat. You can't get across that freeway because if an underpass or an overpass on the freeway also involves an exit or an on-ramp to the freeway, those are going to be blocked very quickly in a crisis. You won't be able to get through. But in every single freeway from Washington, D.C. to New York to L.A., there are places that go across the freeway or under the freeway where there is no corresponding on-ramp or exit. And I cover that and give you examples of that in the book Strategic Relocation. Find those ways. You can find it on Google Maps. Just circle around the freeway and look for those areas across the freeway without an entrance ramp. And that's what you want to find in mapping your way out. Not the major roads, but the side roads. The major roads will be clogged. You can get out through the residential streets if you map your way out and use mapping GPS to find multiple ways to get out without crossing or going through the major roads. Let me talk about the general safe areas in the United States. So the East Coast is generally very lowly rated in my book because of the high population densities. The safest areas in the United States is what I call the Intermountain West, the states of northern Arizona, western Colorado, Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, and parts of Montana, and parts of Nevada. And the reason the Intermountain West is so good strategically is the population density outside of everything except Boise and Salt Lake is about 35 to 40 people per square mile. That's very low compared to 1,000 plus per square mile. I'm not considering Salt Lake City. That's not a safe place at all. Or Boise, the major area. But you don't have to get very far from those cities to find some safe places. A lot of it, for example, in Utah, where I live, you have the mountains that come right down to the edge of the city. I mean, 11, 12, and 13,000 foot mountains that come right down to the edge of the city. So you can get out of the city through one of those canyons and back up into the high mountain valleys beyond those mountains and be relatively safe within 30-minute drive of the city. And there's very few places where you can get 30 minutes away from the city and find relative safety. In Denver, for example, you've got to drive 2 hours before you get to the mountains. So it's... But the main reason that makes the area safe is that it is about 500 to 800 miles to any other major city across trackless deserts. It's 500 miles from Salt Lake City to Denver. It's 800 miles to the San Francisco area. And it's 700 miles to the LA Basin. You want that kind of trackless desert to inhibit a lot of people from going from city to city and finally walking their way to, you know, these areas. Now, that's the general thing. For example, I can find, however, even in one-star states, I can find relative safety if I get rural enough and away from the major cities and roads and do a secure home with basement space. I can find relative security in almost any of the even zero-rated states, but it's not as safe as the long-term security you get from a place that's not going to be subject or being overrun with people. One of the problems with Florida, for example, is you have a water table problem. You can't do basement space in most areas. There are a few exceptions to that. But you don't want to pick a retreat location or a high security location for a home in an area that has a high water table because you need basement space to be concealable. I'm not a big favor, for example, of these shelter systems that are in-ground burial tanks, whether fiberglass or steel. And the reason is that, you know, everybody who sees that semi-truck with that big thing on the back of the truck with the crane that puts it into the ground is going to know what you've got there. And the second thing is all of the vents and all of the openings to get into it are exposed in the ground. Mm-hmm. That's only good if you're putting that thing out in a rural wooded area, you know, where nobody's going to see it going around, nobody. But even then, it's not that safe. It's always better, in my opinion, to have a system, a shelter system underneath a building, so that you've got a reason to be going into the building and nobody thinks anything of you going into your shop building, for example. They don't know that you may have a basement under there. But because you're going to put a building over it, even if you have an underground tank shelter, you ought to put a building over the top of it. But it's even better if you have something attached to your home so that you get into the shelter system from your own basement. And that can include a shelter within the basement or something built on, like a, you put a rec room addition onto your home or a new garage addition, and you sink a basement below that, make that a hidden basement, and then you conceal. And it's true that you have building permits to deal with, but you can obscure those plans. I teach that in the secure home, how to conceal, how to put in the opening so that you don't have anything but a concrete storage room, and then you turn it into a shelter later on through concealing the plans. And that is what we do in any time we build a or design a high security residence. We don't do any building, but we do the design work in our firm. And we always design these concrete as just storage rooms. And so even though, you know, you've got a garage overhead, and that justifies having the 10 or 12 inches of concrete we put in there for radiation resistance. Even though you can do a reinforced concrete floor for about 6 inches. It'll still support vehicles. We put 10 to 12 inches just to make sure that you get good radiation resistance. Now, the purists in the nuclear industry say, oh, no, you got to have 24 inches. And, well, that's, yeah, if you're directly downwind from a nuclear blast and you're going to get 1,000 rems per hour of fallout on top of you, you might need that. But I say, why put all that money into it when you can relocate out of the danger zones where you don't need any more than 10 to 12 inches? And you don't need blast doors. A lot of these shelter systems will sell you these big, expensive, heavy-duty, you know, vault-type blast doors. But don't spend money on that. If you're in a blast zone, move. Relocate. Don't spend the extra $30,000 for blast doors when you can simply get into an area there's no blast possible. I mean, you only got to be 10 miles away from a nuclear target to be out of the blast zone. So don't buy blast doors. And the cheapest way for people to get a shelter and a multi-purpose shelter is not only for fallout protection, but it's to have secure storage for your weapons, your ammunition, your food. And it doesn't do any good to store it if it's going to be vulnerable to the mob coming down the street that's pillaging every single house. You're going to have to secure your food. You're also going to have to hide good people someday who might be hunted by the government. And so it's important to have these secure rooms concealed. Now, the cheapest way for most people to do that who have an existing basement is to use our book, The High Security Shelter. It talks about doing a shelter within an existing basement, how to conceal it, how to put in the ventilation, how to put in the drop ceiling, which you have your concrete blocks over top, over steel decking and things to support it. That can be done in material-wise for about $3,000 to $4,000. And most people can afford that within the next 2 or 3 years, you know, if they really save up for those. Now, you must learn to repair and be handy with tools, because I've had many multi-million dollar clients, which we've designed homes and implemented these shelter systems and sophisticated solar and generating systems with them, and even written them a manual of how to take care of this. And they invariably call you back up when they've got a problem because they don't want to read the manual. They're too busy. They're used to having everything done. They're used to being able to purchase labor and things. Don't be like that. Remember, it takes a fair amount of money to implement a very sophisticated provisioning system where you got a full solar electric tied in with a generator system to be have off-grid power. You've got your emergency water supply and the special pumps that are required to do that. You've got your concealed doors. But when things go wrong, when a lock doesn't work, you've got to know how to repair it. When a pump doesn't work, you've got to know how to replace it or repair it. When your solar system, you've got to have spare parts. You've got to be able to know how to fix things, or when it goes wrong, you're not going to be able to get anyone to repair it. So you must learn and take the time, and you've got the time. If I'm right about time, you've got the time to learn to be prepared. Now, I'm in the midst of preparing a new preparedness system because of having made a change in location to a safer location myself. And that's because when you pick another location, sometimes the city can creep in on you. And, you know, you have a lot of growth within the next 10 or 20 years before I did my first shelter system. Right. And when it starts to encroach, you may have to move. Well, I can tell you that we're into the third year and I'm still not ready. And I'm an expert at this. So I'm saying it does take time and it does take money if you're starting from scratch. Right now in rural America, it's still the cheapest thing to buy existing buildings rather than building from scratch. Because during the housing crisis of 2008 to 2014, when it was low, building prices still continued to rise, and used houses are still a bargain. You know, when you sell a house, you don't get paid for the irrigation system you put in or the outbuildings or the fencing and all that stuff that takes an awful lot of time. So if you want your best bang for the buck, you want to buy used. Now, I still think that the best option for people who live in the city is to save to get a retreat cabin somewhere in a safe area and then move to the periphery of the city so that they can get there when they need to and don't have it too far away. I like to see the optimal retreat compromise location of 1 to 1.5 hours away from a city that has a decent Home Depot or Lowe's or building stores so that you're not traveling forever to get your building supplies. And also an hour to an hour and a half away generally is out of walking distance for most people. It doesn't mean they won't eventually get there if there's real starvation for a long time, but that's a good compromise. If you get over 2 hours away, your cost and your time in building that, if you have to commute out on the weekends to build your retreat, for example, it takes you 2 hours to get there and 2 hours back, and you have to go back to Home Depot for a part, you're going to spend a good deal of your next 10 years transporting. So try to keep it within an hour, hour and a half away from where you live. That's the ultimate. If you're young enough and have the resources where you can learn to fly and you're stuck with a city with a major corporation, get a pilot's license. Now, I'm a pilot. I can tell you I intend to use my airplane to go rescue family members who can't get here. I can overfly the social unrest. I can go to a rural airport, they're all behind fences now. They have fuel supplies, most of them, where you can get refueled with self-service and things. So if you've got the capacity to use technology and things, and there's newer types of aircraft that are going to be coming on the market, I recommend that people do so. I've had several clients learn to fly, and they don't regret it. They're much better off. There's a lot of things that you can do let's suppose that you can't afford anything but the existing home, but you can't afford to move to the periphery of a city. And you can do that even if you don't plan on retreating somewhere, because your chances of surviving at the periphery, especially if it's a large metro area, because remember, the pillaging will occur from the urban centers where you have your most minorities outward, and they have to pillage through all of these neighborhoods before they get to you, and it tends to wear people out. A lot of people get shot or killed in the process of trying to rob and steal their way out. But you must have underground, secured, safe rooms in order to survive, and leave your doors open. Leave a few things to steal, and they'll go on to the next house if you're in a semi-rural suburban area. But you must stockpile enough food to last probably for a year. And the reason I say that is because once an EMP strike, it's going to be about a year before the infrastructure gets restructured where you can start to get food, if at all. And it may be 2 years before the California growing season can start to supply the world with food. It could be worse, but I'm just saying at the earliest, you're going to have a famine for a year. So if you're in an area where you cannot grow, and I include every suburban garden, because in this scenario where people are pillaging for food, you're not going to be able to grow in a suburban garden, even though it's been peaceful up until this time. Your tomatoes will be picked clean before they're even pink in a suburban area. If you want to grow, first of all, you have to do like I do. You've got to get out into the rural farm areas, whereby you just don't have the population density that can threaten a garden. And even then, you have to prepare to protect it with fences. But you can do that if you're rural enough. Any questions you have, Richard, that I haven't covered?
Well, I think, one of the things that's suggested by a lot of what you've said is there's a normalcy bias that makes people take it easy. I mean, that's an example of that is the election of the current president that people think will save everybody. Any kind of justification in your mind that the current comfortable situation will just continue indefinitely might be one of the biggest barriers to getting ready, right? Because it seems like, you can watch a movie and you can go to the store and all this stuff seems like everything's fine. And you're painting a different picture that people should be aware of.
Yeah. Now, it's very important that everybody have some alternate piece of electricity. If you're going to have any use of technology, and I'm not thinking the internet's going to be up for a while. By the way, don't save anything in digital currency. Digital currency is going to go bye-bye when the internet goes down. You won't have access to it. Don't ever count on digital. There are so many scams out there promising big returns in dollars if you invest in these digital currency hedge funds that will pay out in 10 years right in the middle of the war. Well, don't believe it.
Yeah.
You want to stockpile dollar bills. And the secondary barter item you want to stockpile are silver dollars. They're big, fat, and heavy. They won't be worth that much that you can't get, or do away with. You won't be able to get change for things, if you can't trade with something. So if you have gold coins worth $2,000, you're not going to be able to get change when you need to pull it out and use it. So cash will be king. They won't be printing a lot of it at first. And so cash will be king during the worst of the crisis. Stockpile several $1,000s in small bills, $20 and below, to be able to prepare for this.
The thing about silver, you know, even though it has massive advantages and it doesn't inflate or anything like that, if you're seen spending silver, you could get a lot of new friends that you didn't really want in a short time, right? Helping you to go home with your change or whatever you've got.
Yeah. Do have weapons to protect yourself and have a place to secure them in case, because they will, surely when this war comes, they will confiscate weapons and declare a ban on private firearms. So have a place to secure them and hide them, which I won't go into on the air, but plenty of resources on the internet on how to hide weapons and ammunition.
Yeah,
that's very, very important. Now, I want to say, though, you know, that's the importance of concealment. You don't want to shoot just hungry people because they're hungry. You just don't get permission from the Lord to do that. You want to be able to diffuse it by getting out of the way and having your food story hidden. I always stockpile rice as well to give away to the few people that I can. You don't want to let people know that you've got a lot of supplies. They're just going to be hammering at your door all day and all night long. But if you do have to share, it's better to give rice because it doesn't take a wheat grinder to use rice. It stores well. You can hand it. They can just boil it in some water, and they can eat rice. So if you're going to share, only do rice and make sure that you think that's the only thing that people think that's the only thing you have. Now, I don't recommend spending a lot of money on the preparedness foods that are dehydrated, that are very expensive. They don't taste very good after 10 years in storage. I recommend mostly you store your basics, your wheat, rice, and beans. But do store the condiments and things of how to, you know, learn to cook on those things. And one of the preparedness tips in the World Affairs Brief coming up, we're going to be doing one on a special guy named Keith Snow that has some videos out about how to cook with food storage and basic things that are just delicious because he's got the spices and the other things, the dried flakes of onions and garlic and other things that you can make them really delicious with. So remember that you want to spend most of your money on bulk grains and not on the dehydrated. Use the dehydrated for a variety of things and the canned goods and peanut butter for variety. But you want to get your bulk. For $1,000, you can get tons of these things rather than, you know, thousands just giving you a few boxes of the more expensive foods.
You know, one of the main things that comes up in all of what you've said is that just like most of the people now live in the cities and are dealing with that situation to start from, the central bank scenario has been very successful in the sense that even though most countries, including the U.S., are incredibly rich in the form of natural resources, it hasn't made it to most of the people because of the banking system. And so if they're looking at, they really want to do the things that you're talking about, then I would say a huge majority of people are in this situation. But personally, they're so limited with money that they're looking immediately, okay, if I want to do this stuff, there must be a way to leverage more people than just myself. How do you, in a not, you know, disastrous way, make use of what you can do, pooling resources in groups, or is that at all even an option?
Well, I'm very skeptical. You know, I have been in this business for 40 years of helping people prepare, and I have never seen a community, a survival community, survive because of infighting. Yeah. First of all, preparedness people are very independent-minded people. They aren't group people very much. It's very difficult to pool resources to get things done and not have, there's always somebody a little bit more money that everyone's going to attach themselves to and try to expect them to fund things for everyone else. And all this becomes a right. You're part of our group and you got money and we don't, so you owe it to us, you know, to pay for this. And I'll tell you, the infighting is just, even with religious groups, you get a little difference in doctrine and it blows them apart and they can't live with somebody who disagrees with them in doctrine. And
you know, the other guy's wrong anyway, right? So everything's justified.
Yeah. And so here's what I recommend. And the only thing that works, and that is, don't try to buy property next to each other together. If you pick on a, an area, and it is very difficult, by the way, to pick a common area that everybody can go live to that suits everybody. And so you buy a big piece of property and try to sell lots for things. It just doesn't fit very many people in their unique situation. So there's two ways to do this. First of all, it only takes a few friends to help out in things. And so if you live in the same general area and you have tools that you can share one another, and it should be shared, but it should be owned by one person, not owned by a group, then you can do things. You can share knowledge and know-how. Somebody are going to be more prepared and know how to do things than others. Don't worry about having a certified medical doctor in your midst. Medical doctors only use drugs and only know how to use drugs, you know. Get somebody and learn yourself how to deal with natural medicine and natural nutrition and things to heal a lot of things rather than try to depend on an MD in your midst. But the important point is you don't want to live in the same, lest you get a reputation as a compound, as a survivalist organization, and get targeted. If everyone remembers the Rajneesh that moved into Eastern Oregon and tried to take over the county and the government, they got ran out of town because of this. There was an area called the Citadel in Idaho. You don't want to name a group the Citadel as if it's a fortress, you know, and get a reputation for things like that. Yeah. You know, there's the Vivos underground bunker system in Nebraska or out there in the Midwest that we find out now they don't even own the land. They've rented the land. You know, they've got these underground condos, and you can't live there until the stuff hits the fan. And you're going to depend on a corporation having employees there to open the gates and let you in and run the systems that have never been tested, you know, with people in them. It's just a nightmare, you know. I can tell you that there's going to be hundreds of people surrounding that gate wanting to get in, and you're not going to be able to get even if you own property in there. So I recommend people do a networking informally with people. Build your own informal network of people you can trust, and don't have a formal same living in the same compound. It just doesn't work. It always is a problem because every type of communal or community living thing has an HOA, has to have some legal things. Nobody's going to be able to pay for their share. It's all going to end up on the person who's got the most resources. He's going to be damaged through having to use all of his facilities for the other people when things run short. So keep everything private, but network with people, and even considering networking with people that you get to know who already live in the area, who are conservative and who are good moral people, who when the crisis happens, they'll be very amenable to helping out. A lot of farmers have welders and tools and generators and other things that can help out. Right. But you can't demand. You've got to represent everyone's privacy and their private property.
So maintain independence and privacy, and the basic unit that I think you're talking about is families, right? But if people are not in a family situation, and a lot of people today aren't, can they do something similar with a close group of friends, or are they going to just be one single person alone? I mean,
well, I'm just saying that everybody needs to do their own thing alone, but band together with like-minded people. And friends are better than family in most cases. You pick your friends based upon compatibility. You don't pick your family. And very often people have their own children. One of the worst things I worry about is in our own community with a lot of like-minded people, is their own children coming back to roost, and they're unprepared and they're spoiled and they're worldly, and you know, and they're going to expect because their family to share in what their family is prepared for.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a lot of conflict within families that are, everybody's supposed to be in harmony. It doesn't really work out that way all the time in real life.
It doesn't. Well, there's a lot to cover. I recommend that people get my books if you're serious about preparedness. There's three books. There's The Secure Home, over 700 pages, and it's just in the new fourth edition. It covers all the latest developments in solar and generator integration, everything in the full range of preparedness for new construction and remodeling. The smaller book, which is more economical for people, is the High Security Shelter book. It's got the same appendix as The Secure Home with all the hundreds of pages of resources of people of hard-to-find equipment and tools and things to get. The High Security Shelter is the cheapest way for most people to get a secure, concealed shelter. And then there's Strategic Relocation, in which people need to map out their strategy of how to find a retreat site or a relocation site to give them a higher degree of safety than where they presently live.
Right.
And then there's my World Affairs Brief, which is how to keep up to date on what's coming in the world and the threats of war in the future.
Revised timetables as we go along, I expect.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And maybe if you get a chance and you feel like it, come back and give us an update on how things are going too.
Yeah, we ought to do that at least once a year.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Okay.
Thanks, Joel.
Thanks.
Hold on.
My pleasure.
Okay, everybody, there goes Joel Skousen. That was probably the final episode for this series. I hope you got something out of it. He's got a lot of incredible insight and experience that is not common. He's done so much consulting for intentional communities and people that wanted to make their location the best possible place to set up self-sufficiency and how to build homes in a secure way and all kinds of interesting stuff. So take the parts that are most valuable for you and see what you can learn from them. I thought in general, it's all built around the expectation of nuclear war. And I thought it was interesting in this particular episode that he said he made an estimate of the probability of the nuclear war happening, 100%. That's like forecasting rain when it's already raining, right? And it's pretty safe to say 100%. So I'm not saying I hope Joel is right, but I respect his ability to predict things like that, and I think it deserves attention. And as he said before, in many ways, if you prepare and there's no disaster, it's not a disaster that there's no disaster. You're still in better shape because of the preparations that you made, and hopefully live in a nicer place and know more about how to support your own lifestyle, whatever it is, and you've learned more skills and maybe learned better how to get along with other people and all kinds of positive side effects, even if there's no nuclear war in it. As most of you know, a lot of our work in the Lost Arts Radio Project is looking ahead at what the global rulers plan for us, and which is not really very friendly, not human friendly, and it's more toward extermination and destruction. And as we've said many times, I don't think that's a very good plan, even for them. And I think they're highly, confused with the programming they've got, but I don't think they want to stop. And so whatever we can do to change that or lighten it or make the future better, that's a really high priority interest that we have. And in addition to that, giving information like from Joel and other educational people about what you can do to upgrade your own life and your health and things like that. So hopefully you'll be really working on that. And one of the main messages was don't underestimate the value of whatever time remains between now and when things get more difficult, or even in our lives in general. Each hour that we've got is worth being wide awake for and using to the best of our ability and helping each other as much as we can. I guess that was the main thing. So I agree with his idea of subscribing to World Affairs Brief if you want to stay up to date with his predictions and timetables as they get revised as time goes along. And he reminded us that we can get a free copy emailing editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And if you do it now, he'll send out the current one, and you can see if you'd like to get the rest of them coming up. The other books that he's gotten, I've read Strategic Relocation. It's excellent, and I think there's a new edition of that out. There's also The Secure Home and The High Security Shelter, both of which he talked about today. Interesting that he said if you're relocating and buying property, it's a better deal to buy it with existing buildings on it rather than building everything from scratch. Even if you're a billionaire yourself, you can tear down those buildings when you've got better ones, but it gives you something to live in for the moment. I recommend his books. They're highly informative. And he talked a little bit about what to stockpile and things like that. I found that very interesting. And through the whole discussion, I thought this emphasis on normalcy bias, and that it's really hard to imagine before things get more difficult that it's ever going to change. You know, and mostly people get blindsided by major changes because of that. And I'm sure I've been, you know, guilty of the same thing myself. So it comes down to increasing all areas of consciousness as much as you can. That's what we're working on in Planetary Healing Club. If you want to participate in an ongoing, very supportive group that's working on the information that you're not supposed to have about how to get your health back and how to make use of consciousness tools that are practical and not just beliefs and new agey stuff, but things you can really use to make the physical changes much easier, then you can join us if you want to on Planetary Healing Club. We meet live every week. It's interactive. We're all there in real time discussing things that would be difficult to talk openly about on the big public platforms, and I'll share anything of use that I've got that you could use from the more than 50 years of experimental research in these things that I've been doing myself. If you want to get access to that, it's at planetaryhealingclub.com. Planetaryhealingclub.com, not just for spectators, but if you're really willing to start learning and upgrading your own personal life and transformation of how you view things and expanding your awareness and consciousness, then you're personally invited. It'd be nice to see you there every week. And if the timing doesn't work out, you're in the wrong part of the world to participate live, you have access to all the archives. Definitely worthwhile, I think, if you're wanting to start that kind of work on yourself, which affects your relationships with everybody else. It makes you more effective in activism that you may be doing in various causes, and changes everything to open up your own consciousness and start learning areas that you need to know about. Other than that, if you have the resources to keep us on the air and help us with the projects that we've got on hold waiting for money, then we've got a new page at subscribestar.com/lostartsradio. You can support us there. And we've got donate buttons that are simpler on both sites. If you prefer that, it's at lostartsradio.com and lostartsresearchinstitute.org. And that latter site is our nonprofit site that keeps everything going. And you can read a little bit more about what we have in mind to do, depending on the resources that come in. LostArtsResearchInstitute.org. Sunday night shows continue. They're always free and they're public, and they're on lots of different platforms now, still expanding to other ones. So you can find those Sunday. Every Sunday a new one comes out. Educational people like Joel and others. And I've learned a tremendous amount by being privileged to be right in the middle of that. In case we disappear from major platforms that you're used to finding us on, a couple of things you need to do before you forget. Go to lostartsradio.com, sign up for the mailing list there so we can stay in touch with you if the other platforms go down. All we need is a name and an email address where you'd like to receive things if we can't get them to you on the normal platforms. And you can get on that list also by texting a name and phone number to 928-235-4676, or emailing info@lostartsradio.com. I think that's about it, and we'll keep putting out as much information that hopefully will be helpful to you as we possibly can. If you have feedback, you want to make suggestions of topics for us to cover, I really want them to be relevant to you to the maximum. So whether it's for planetaryhealingclub.com, those live meetings, which you're invited to, or the regular shows like this one, or the Lost Arts Radio live show that's on major platforms right now at 4:30 Pacific time, 7:30 Eastern time every Saturday afternoon. Those are free and public. Communicate, let us know what you're interested in us getting into in detail, and we'll try to accommodate that as much as possible, and just email suggestions or questions or comments or anything like that to me, richard@lostartsradio.com. I'll read them all and respond as soon as I can. I think that's about it. Hope you enjoyed this show and the series, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Introducing Lost Arts Radio on subscribestar.com. Just go to subscribestar.com/lostartsradio to find our rewards program, offering 10 different giving levels starting at just $5 a month. We offer incredible value for any rewards level, from extra monthly interview videos not available publicly to subscription-based Planetary Healing Club videos once, twice, or three times a month, to private counseling sessions with Lost Arts Radio host Richard Sacks, to tech help with me, Doug Diamond. We even have one option where you can be the star on Lost Arts Radio as our guest on a specially produced show just for you. We conduct an interview with you and broadcast it to our growing network and listenership. Our subscribe star levels are one of a kind and offer great rewards for any budget. Please help support Lost Arts Radio. We can't do it without you. With increasing censorship on many of our channels, we really need your support today to keep doing what we're doing. As Richard says, we're not even at survival level yet. Lost Arts Radio has three weekly shows. Lost Arts Radio Live each Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, which is a live stream currently on multiple platforms in case we get banned from some of the larger ones. Right now, we're on two YouTube channels, Facebook Live, Periscope, which is Twitter, Twitch, and DLive. You can access these broadcasts by going to www.lostartsradio.com/live for all the links to those channels. The Planetary Healing Club meets right after Lost Arts Radio Live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights. And our Sunday show with guests airs at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Sunday nights on our Blog Talk Radio channel, our YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and on Brighteon. Be sure to sign up for our free email list just in case we do get banned on big tech's platforms. It's just a matter of time, really. They don't like the stuff we talk about, and they do not want the truth out there. In fact, they have already attacked us numerous times. Join our free email list so we can let you know where we are and how to access our shows. The sign-up button is right on the top right on most pages of our website. The best starting point for all things Lost Arts Radio is our main site, lostartsradio.com, where you can find the hottest news selection videos that we curate just for you. Those are on the homepage and added to daily, as well as articles and breaking news about information you really need to know. Our show archives, the 10 most recent shows, are right on our homepage, as well as our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/lostartsradio, or just click the All Things Radio Show tab right on our website. We're in the podcast directory on iTunes, and all of our shows except the banned ones are on our YouTube channels at Lost Arts Radio and at Diamond Disc. Our Brighteon page is really taking off, and we often have editors' picks videos right on their homepage. Visit brighteon.com/channel/lostartsradio. On our site, you can also access our free listener forum as well as sign up for the Planetary Healing Club, which is just $25 a month, where you get private access to a one-on-one interaction with host Richard Sacks and myself and the other club members who participate live. More info can be found at planetaryhealingclub.com. We're providing solutions in there to make the world a better place. Come join us. Stay tuned because up next, you'll get to hear a really great song by an independent artist that we're doing our best to support. Go to lostartsradio.com/music for the full list of all the great songs and bands that we spin on our audio-only podcast shows. If you're in a band and want to submit a song for consideration for airplay on Lost Arts Radio, visit my website at diamonddiscaudio.com for more information about the music placement, mastering, and mixing work that I do. Thanks again for listening to and supporting Lost Arts Radio. We love having you as part of our family to learn, experience, and grow with.
Fly. We're gonna fly. what we're meant to do. We're gonna fly through the sky.